Welcome to another episode of the Salt City Sports Podcast. I'm your host, Chase Carter, joined here by my brother in arms, brother in blood, Clay. What's up, man?
Let's get it. Excited to be here, bro. Lots going on this week. It's a crazy time with the holidays, with sports. Exciting time, man. We got bowl games. We got NFL Saturday. We got two Monday night games coming up. We got Thursday games wrapping up. NBA starting to heat up. It's a fun time, dude.
Yeah, a lot going on. In our personal lives, everything's crazy this time of year, right before Christmas, and sports couldn't be any better. So, got a lot to get to. Let's jump right in. I think we'll have definitely a nice episode for you guys tonight. It's Tuesday, December 19th, and we are here recording another episode of the Salt City Sports Podcast. We'll start out with our normal peaks and valleys segment. We'll get into college football with BYU and hiring an offensive coordinator, which was some big news this last week. Talk a little BYU-Utah football, or excuse me, basketball. Nice to have that game played again.
Yep.
Great result. And then we'll get in the NFL, which was nuts. A lot went on this last weekend, and it's very spicy in the NFL.
A lot of things happened, a lot of good matchups, some great games. So, yeah, a lot going on there.
Yeah, excited. So, and then we'll end up with the Jazz and finish with a nice food review. Maybe cool. Talk a little extra college hoops as well. So,
right on.
Let's start with peaks and valleys. You want to start us off this time?
Sure. I'll start with my valley. So, we had a Jessica. We ended up watching Jessica's, our niece and nephew, mm-hmm. on Jessica's side. Her aunt and uncle had a Christmas party to go to. So they called us up, see if we could watch their kids. And, we said, sure. So they brought them over, dropped them off. And we were kind of running around. We actually went and picked up Lila, my other niece, my sister's daughter, so that they had someone to play with. And the three of us.
Playdates.
Yeah. Dude, we're the aunt and uncle of the year. So we brought them over to our house. We were watching Christmas movies and doing that stuff. And actually, Saturday night, so there was the Chiefs Chargers game going on, and Lions Bears before that. I didn't really want to bring that up, but so it was fun, a lot going on. And we took them when we went to pick up Lila. We actually ran and got dinner, so we stopped at a place I never go to. I think I've been there once before, which is Noodles and Company, and. Really? It was the one place that everyone could decide on with the kids, and I guess they have decent kids meals. Mm-hmm. So we went there, we sat down, we got some food. Everyone was happy for the most part. They got something they wanted. But right when we sat down, cute little Nola, she started having like a headache and started getting like really tired and, rubbing her eyes and stuff. And she's five. So she didn't really want to eat. We packed up and we took the food to go. She was kind of complaining of a headache. So we stopped and got her some children's Tylenol. Just stopped at the grocery store. Picked up like some of that grape flavored, the liquid stuff. Remember that?
Yeah.
It was so good when you were little.
Yeah. It's weird how good it was.
The grape flavored medicine was awesome. So we gave that. We got it down the hatch. And, almost immediately she perked right up. Which was nice. It seemed like she was feeling a lot better. We got back to the house and Simon and Lila were running around having fun. And finally Nola jumped in and was like having fun as well. And, we were setting up board games and whatnot. And all of a sudden in our front room, I look over and Nola's just standing in the doorway between the kitchen and the family room. And she's just looking like straight ahead, like she'd seen a ghost. And I look down and there's just a giant pile of puke.
Ugh.
And I was like, oh, and she's just staring, like, I don't know if she was nervous or, it hurt or what was going on. So I was like, oh crap. So, I didn't know what to do immediately. I was like, and then it kicked in. I was like, let's run her to the bathroom. So I start ushering her to the bathroom, which is pretty close. I mean, it's like 8 or 9 feet away.
Yeah, that's what's close.
So I get her to the doorway. I start to push her literally into the bathroom. The toilet seat's up. We get like 12 inches away, dude, and she just lets it fly. So it hits like the bottom of the toilet, all over the base, all over the mat and the rug, and just goes everywhere.
Worst possible place.
And then she got to the toilet and, you know, like two more pukes. So she just was not feeling well and it all came out. And this was like, this food was not digested. Okay, so it was full chicken nuggets. It was like, it was everything. But she's the sweetest little girl, and I felt so bad. There's nothing worse than when the little kid feels sick.
Yeah.
And so, you know, but, you know, I mean, I'm not that strong when it comes to smelling puke. Like, I get the gags, too, and I start doing the little dry heave. So Jessica's a trooper, and she helped clean most of it up while I, you know, ran around and lassoed the other kids. But little kid puking, cleaning that up, probably my valley of the week. So
yeah, that's rough. I'm the same. I get the gags going. I smell even just the poopy diaper now, and I start, you know.
There's nothing, not for little kids. I felt really bad for Nola.
But just thinking about them.
There's nothing funnier than someone puking. Because it just is so funny to see the different styles of people just letting it fly, because you're never going to be in a like less vulnerable state.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like everyone looks ridiculous. Everyone sounds ridiculous.
I can't even think about it.
I'm super loud. Like I'm like, and Jessica's like, nip, nip. And it like just, I don't know. Everyone pukes different. It's hilarious.
So the last time I threw up was in 2013.
Mm-hmm. What day?
I got food poisoning. Yeah. I'm one of those people, I refuse to throw up. I would rather have a stomach ache for 6 hours than throw up. And I don't know what it is. My body's just like, not coming out.
Really?
Because when I do, it's super painful. I yell. I go, it sounds like I'm dying. It's the worst.
I'm the exact opposite. Like if there's even a hint of like a stomach ache or something, like I'll go in and like, let's do this. Cause I always feel way better after. And honestly, that's how Nola was when she was done puking. She then was running around having fun.
Good for you guys, because I can't.
Oh, I feel bad for you, dude. Yeah. Like sometimes it just feels great to get it out.
Well, I obviously have some digestive issues. I can't even burp. So there's issues with things coming out. So
you haven't puked in 4 years and you haven't burped since you were 4 years old.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, that's rough. Never fun to have a little kid puking, especially at your house.
Yep.
So my valley is, I don't know.
Your memory?
Yeah, exactly. Mine's kind of a two-parter. They always are, you know? And Britt and I decided to we're kind of like slowly redoing our countertops. Our kitchen.
Yeah, so we're doing the whole thing.
We're doing the whole thing. And this was the countertops. And we kind of course, like in typical Chase fashion, I decided to pull the trigger on the countertops in the most expensive month of the year, December. And so I decided to...
So I'm not getting a present this year?
No, that was it. That's Christmas. So I got these new countertops put in. But in order to do that, we had to take they give you this bid, and they're like, well, we can take out your existing countertop. And I'm like, well, it's tile. They're like, oh, it's tile? It's going to be $1,000 to take them out. And I was like, no, I'm doing that. So the guy kind of told me, if you do it a certain way, it's really easy. They just, basically all these people did is they took, there was like a laminate countertop there before, and these people just tiled over it. So like,
if like, you can like just, a little shell around it? Or yeah, like-
exactly. And so he's like, if you go in and you just unscrew the original countertop, it'll just lift right off.
Nice.
And so I'm excited about that. I'm like, okay, I thought we were gonna have to break it all apart and be scared about breaking the cabinets. We've already painted the cabinets, redone the cabinets, things like that. So
yeah.
I have my brother-in-law and my father-in-law come over, and I say, let's do it on Saturday because the install people were coming on Monday for the new countertops. And Sunday we had two Christmas parties. We had my family Christmas party and Britt's family Christmas party. So it was a busy day. Plus it's a Sabbath, you know, football day too. Mm-hmm. A lot going on. I just, no time for countertop removal. So they come in, and the plan was to kind of get going around, you know, 11 in the morning, whatever. And I talked to my brother-in-law about it, how we were just going to unscrew, lift out. We were maybe going to cut in one spot. And then, it was like, we could pretty much get it out in like four or five just big chunks and be done. It wouldn't take very long. Now there was like a little mini backsplash of just single tiles. So I start chipping those away and I just get like a little, shim thing. And I was just pounding. And the first one, huge hole in the drywall. And I was like, well, great.
No,
that's not good. So I was like, well, let's stop, because the tiles went below the current countertop. So it was leveraging back into the wall, creating holes. It's like, okay, well, let's see if we can get these out. So I start trying to unscrew the existing the screws where they were screwed in. And I was having the hardest time seeing, cause you have to take all the drawers out. And my father-in-law is like, well, go out and see if you have another one of these tools. And I'm like, okay, I go out, I come back in, and he's just pounding the shit out of the counter. He's like, I decided to start breaking this up. Just pounding the tiles, creating a huge mess. And we didn't cover any of the stuff. So we took out the drawers, but not the stuff underneath the drawers, like the cabinets.
Right.
So there's just tile falling in everywhere.
All the pots and
all
pans.
Our stuff, all of our pots and pans, all of our stuff. And I was like, okay. And by the time I got it out, like literally, like I got the screws out finally. I had to take some of them out by hand because it was hard to get the gun up in there. And it was like, it probably would have taken 15 minutes if we just would have.
Really?
Yeah. And then we ended up, so it was just super annoying. Then I realized if we take all it all out, we get a few more holes in the drywall, but we get those off okay. And then I realized, like, you know how hard it is to have a baby and just no kitchen countertops and no kitchen.
Right.
Also included in that is a sink. So we don't have a kitchen sink anymore.
It's killer.
And it doesn't seem like that big of a deal, but for 2 days it was like just super annoying. Like we had to fill bottles up in the bathroom.
Yeah.
It's the only thing we had. It's the only kitchen sink we have in this house. So just super annoying. And then on top of that, we had the double Christmas party on Sunday, which I learned my lesson. It's like, just choose one family and go to that one.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, we did the thing in the morning with our family, right? Did that one. We went straight to the next family party, had family pictures, a lot of stress, a lot of this, a lot of that. The baby was done like halfway through.
Oh, yeah.
Had the biggest like temper tantrum she's ever had. So we just bailed. Came home and it was like, I was exhausted. It was just like a super stressful Sunday filled with way too much family, not enough countertop. But well, did get the countertops in on Monday. Nice good, quartz dude. Countertops. Got the sink
tweet
in.
Out a pic, dude.
Maybe I'll send a pic out. Yeah, I don't know.
Put that on the tweeters.
Put on the tweeters for the 45 followers. Get their love. I'll take it.
They look good, dude. So
thanks. Now we just got to do the backsplash and we'll be done. So it'll be nice, but...
Well, I'm looking forward to it. Do you want me to hop?
Yeah, why don't you let's hit you with
peak.
My peak?
Yeah, let's do it. Let's climb that mountain, Chase. Yep. So, I'm not like a huge tradition guy. I do, you know, we have a couple of family traditions, and I guess I do like them. We, you know, this one. So my peak is this last Sunday. Every year we meet up with my mom's side of the family, aunts, uncles, cousins, everybody, and we go to the spoken word. So it's downtown at the conference center, which this building is incredible. Like every time I walk in there, it's you look at it from the street and it just looks like just like a regular building, and then you get inside and it's like deceptively big.
It opens up. Yeah.
It's dug out, you know, it's in the ground a little bit, but it holds 20,000 people. Like, that's the Vivint Smart Home Arena. But it just looks
like... It looks like a fourth of the size.
Yeah, it looks like an office building or something. Yeah. And, I mean, it's really cool looking. And then just the acoustics and everything about the building is just top notch. But we go down and we go to the, you know, it's a half-hour program. It's just... Christmas songs. They have the whole stage decked out in like these really cool Christmas trees and different decorations and ornaments. And, you know, it's just a cool little thing to get in the Christmas spirit.
Yeah.
And the music is incredible. And I get to count it as like a church day.
Yeah.
I'm kind of one of those, you know, what they call creaster. I'm more of a Christmas and Easter type of dude when it comes to church on Sunday. So I get to count this. My mom loves me for it, for going. It's like her favorite
thing.
Points
everywhere, right?
Yeah.
Points upstairs, points with your mom.
But I also enjoy it. Like,
yeah.
I really like going. It's It's awesome. And after that, we head back to mom's house and she makes a big breakfast for the whole family. It's always bomb. And so, yeah, like every year we do that. We've been doing it for like probably almost 10 years now. Mm-hmm. And if you haven't done it, I would honestly recommend it. It's a good time. It's something to see. Even if you go once, I don't know. Got me in this Christmas spirit.
Yeah, so. For me, it's like, it's not really Christmas season until we do that. Because we usually go the first Sunday.
We usually do. So this year we mixed
it up. We moved it back a little bit.
We usually go the first Sunday. And this last Sunday was really cool. They had a guest speaker and a female vocalist that was really good that had solos. So she was like a guest of the week or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so it was kind of cool to see that. But it was a lot more busy. Like they were filling the upper deck this time.
Yeah.
We usually go the first week in December and you can walk right in and get a pretty good seat. Mm-hmm. So if you are going to go, I would recommend that first weekend in December and maybe you'll see us there.
Yeah. So. Yeah. It's because normally it's held at with the Mormon Tabernacle Choir, it's held at the Tabernacle, but for the Christmas season, they move over to the conference center. So it fits more people and it's a lot of fun. Yeah. I really enjoy doing that as well. So my peak, also kind of a multifaceted peak, just a great weekend for me. I haven't had a weekend like this in, I don't know, 5-6 years. the 49ers won, you know, Jimmy G, he's on pace to never lose. That's great.
Undefeated.
3-0. Yeah, undefeated, 3-0, Jimmy G.
He looks good.
If we weren't mathematically eliminated from the playoffs, I'd say watch out, but we are. So I had a big fantasy win on the legs of Todd Gurley.
Wow.
And he flat out embarrassed the Seahawks, so made it even better. Like, I am not a Rams fan. Like, they're in my division, but enjoyed it. I enjoyed it a lot, seeing that. Go up to Seattle in December and just, they almost blanked him. Like, it was just.
You know, and Gurley just swung, like, 80% of fantasy championships, right? Like,
oh, yeah.
I mean, if you had him on that, on your team, you.
44 points for me.
Yeah, that won the game. He won so many freaking playoff games this week.
Yeah, I literally won by, it ended up being a big one. I won by 40 points and he had 44. So jeez. I'll take it. And then obviously BYU beating Utah in basketball was just a huge high point for me. So something really funny about that. It was a late game. It started at 9 on ESPNU in the beginning because there was some weird national volleyball championship.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, I get it. Like, obviously it was on first, but. Luckily, BYU or ESPN does have the many channels. They moved over to ESPNU. Yeah. But it was so funny to watch people tweeting out who didn't have ESPNU, just cheering. All of a sudden, they started cheering for Nebraska to win the volleyball game because they were like, couldn't see the game. They didn't know what was going on. You know, I luckily had ESPNU, so I could watch it. But
right,
it was 9 o'clock, so the baby was already asleep. It's 10 o'clock. The game's getting 10:30. The game's getting kind of spicy in that second half. Utah made a run and in comes Peyton Dastrup, 6'10", you know, out of Arizona, picks and pops, knocks down two huge threes to kind of like keep the lead up to 10 for BYU. And I was cheering as loud as I could without actually making noise. I was audibly just pumping my fists in the air. I was Tiger Woods in it all over the place. And my wife like heard like weird noises, so she came down. Britt was like, "What are you doing?" And I was just dancing and trying not to make noise, but I was like,
"Yeah,
cheering."
Right.
Next time you're watching the game, try and cheer and not make noise. It's very difficult, but I was doing it.
That's awesome.
So it was pretty fun. So
you know that Saturday, that was the cherry on top because that was a beautiful Saturday. So we had the start of kind of the bowl games, then we had the two NFL games. So we had the afternoon, then the night. And then you had Jazz Cavs.
Yep.
And it felt like, oh, that was fantastic. And then here comes BYU Utah. Yeah. And it started so late that it was just like, you got to watch the whole thing after everything else had finished.
It was awesome. It was a great sports Saturday. Great sports weekend for me. Doesn't happen very often. So I was pretty stoked.
Happy for you, bud.
Thanks. I'll take it. So let's talk a little bit more about BYU heading into, you know, let's just touch on the big news out of BYU football this week, obviously, is we hired Coach Grimes out of LSU as our offensive coordinator. What's your reaction?
Well, he sounds like a stud. I mean, I've gone back and listened to him a little bit now, and I've heard I think one interview since he's got the job. I don't know. I think LSU sounds like they're super bummed to lose him. Mm-hmm. That's always kind of a good reaction. You gauge what the fans and the other coaches, you know, that coaching staff thinks and what they say. And you can get a good kind of measure on what he meant to that LSU team. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like they're super bummed. And even Coach O's come out and, you know, he wanted to keep him and even went back and tried to counter and get him to stay. Mm-hmm. So that's a good sign. As far as the offense, you know, it's a little concerning. I would be lying if I didn't think, you know, he's never called plays before. But I have read now, and I think I heard in that interview I mentioned earlier that he has called plays here and there. Yeah. So that in certain situations, OCs and different head coaches have come to him, and he's given play calls in certain situations. So he's done a little bit of it, but he sounds like a stud. I don't know. You want Kalani? This was Kalani's guy, right, Chase?
Yeah. So as far as I'm aware, what I've understand is, Kalani went to him back when he was assembling his staff, and Grimes ended up getting a raise from LSU and stayed. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of nice to know that Kalani kind of got his guy. This is who we wanted to have.
Right.
We went with Ty Detmer, I think, based on that we didn't get Grimes, and based on I think there was some outside pressure from probably Tom Homo and others.
Fan base got behind.
Yeah, well, everyone wanted Ty Detmer. I mean, the idea of Ty Detmer was great. And,
yeah.
So it kind of worked out, you know, and now that... the positive spin zone in here that I'm trying to take is like Kalani has his guy now, mm-hmm. right? And so it's either going to be a good thing or a bad thing because this is who Kalani wants,
right?
So there's obviously pressure, and I mean, he's saying the right things. He says he wants to assemble the greatest staff that he's ever, you know, the BYU's ever had.
Well, and that's going to make the biggest difference, right? Like, who mm-hmm. can he go get? If he can go get some studs, if he has some clout. Mm-hmm. To go get really good position coaches, that will make a difference next year. So filling out the staff is, you know, cliche or whatever. He says he wants to, like you said, assemble the greatest. But that does matter when it comes down to it. So this is just the first domino. It'll be interesting to see who fills those other gaps as far as, like, the position coaches mm-hmm. and who he keeps around.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the big thing, right, is to see who he's going to keep around. There hasn't really been any official talk yet. The only person we've really heard of is there's been some talk and some signs that Reno Mahe has probably done. So that'll be interesting to see how that all shakes out. It'll come out in the next few weeks, I hope. Only thing that kind of concerns me is getting on the recruiting trail. We're losing recruits left and right, which is to be expected with coaching changes. But we've lost some recruits, and so I'd like to just see them hit the recruiting, you know, the recruiting trail hard and get back on the horse of recruiting. It's the big that's how you win in college, right. in college sports. Blood, yeah, right. It's the lifeblood. Yeah,
for sure. He's already, you know, in that interview, he did mention how he's already had to go back and call the five or six kids that he directly recruited mm-hmm. and let them down. And so, you know, I think he knows how to recruit, and hopefully he can swing some guys to Provo. So,
yeah. Here's an interesting tidbit. So Grimes, as far as salaries that are listed, he was ranking number 76 in assistant salaries, according to USA Today. His 2017 salary at LSU was $560,000.
So there's no way he's making that much coming here, though, right? Why would he take a pay cut?
I don't think he does. Unless he's just dying to be an offensive coordinator.
Or maybe we just got close, but you get that. Yeah, you get the OC title. Mm-hmm. Maybe, but that still seems like a lot for our coordinators.
The Utah's defensive coordinator, Morgan Scally, is highest local coach on here in Utah, and he's making $525,000.
And he sucks.
So that's, you know, money. I think everybody's dream is to see what we're spending on coaches. We just have no idea, but I'm excited for him. It'll be good.
Sell some more Young Livin's oil and let's get on it.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think that's one day. I feel like one day, like somebody like I don't know if it'll be Deadspin, but somebody's going to like crack our book somehow and it's going to come out.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I feel like it's in some like holy of holy vaults that just can't be unlocked unless the President Monson is the one that does it by like retinal and fingerprint scanner.
I feel like that too.
You know, it's like they hold that stuff so near and dear. So.
But he's got a great coaching tree, Chase. I'm excited for him.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard not to be excited.
When
he was here last as an offensive line coach, my buddy Braden Hansen, who was offensive lineman at BYU for 4 years, loved him. He was here from 04 to 06. Those are some good years. You know, those are some fun years.
And we had a really good O-line.
Yeah, we had a great offensive line back then. And I think it's partially who we had, and I think they were coached really well. And so it's weird mentally for me to think like offensive line coach to offensive coordinator, but the dude obviously knows the game. And you can look at other offensive linemen. He does have a connection to Andy Reid. Andy Reid was one of his coaches in college. And so, Andy Reid obviously turned out to be a great coach as well, right? Yep. Being an offensive lineman. So if you know the game, you know the game. That's just what it is. Exactly. So I'm excited to see what he does.
Me too.
All right. So let's talk some more football. Let's get into the NFL. There was a lot that went on this week. Do you want to go over your picks first? Or do you want to talk about the games first?
Let's do my picks first. Let's get those out of the way.
All right, let's do it.
So last week, I had a pretty good week. I'm actually now currently on an 8-4 run, Chase, over the last 4 weeks.
Nice.
Which is very profitable. So we just keep stacking that cheddar. And my three picks last week were Baltimore at Cleveland. I'm going to continue to fade the Browns. Baltimore ended up winning that easily. I think they won by 17, I think, was the final. And, you know, Cleveland just continues to be Cleveland. So, Baltimore, I don't know. Some weeks they look really good. Like, they'll blow out the Dolphins by 40. And then other weeks that offense just looks pathetic to me.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, Flacco throws like the shortest routes out of anyone in the NFL, which is not a good stat to have. Like, you want to be able to pick up chunks, and he just dinks and dunks all day. And that running game. So much
for having Mike Wallace, right?
And exactly. And that running game isn't what it was before. So, a little worried about their offense, but they got it done in Cleveland. Okay. So, second pick was Bengals at Minnesota. Folks, this can happen from time to time. I bet on a team, they didn't show up. What else can I do? I got to move on. Minnesota's really good. The Bengals completely folded in that game. You know, right before that game started. Kind of
weird news, right?
Yeah.
Which
I think, like, feels like it affected them.
Yeah. Like, well, it's weird that your coach comes out before a game and is like, I'm done.
Yeah. And so guess what the players did? Yeah, us too.
Yeah, we're done too. Yeah.
And they didn't freaking play. So 10.5, man, that's a lot. I like getting those points, but they just did not show up. That game was not competitive at all. What are you going to do? You take it on the chin there. So the third game, and this one was a crazy football game. I actually wanted to talk about this one a little bit. The Pats went to Pittsburgh, and a lot of gambling tips and different things to learn from this last Sunday, and specifically this game. So the Pats were favored by 2 on Sunday when I first saw it. It opened up at -2. I hit that right away. On Tuesday of last week, I gave them out at -2. It was still at -2. As the week goes on, money pours in on these lines, okay? So money poured in on the Pats. They had moved to 2.5. And then eventually they moved to 3. And in football, obviously, like, 3 is a key number, right?
Right.
Because field goals, that's a lot of games end on 3.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as it got to 3... smart money actually poured in on Pittsburgh, which makes sense because you have an 11-2 team at home getting a field goal. Mm-hmm. So it pushed it back down to 2.5. So it moved between 2.5 and 3 towards the end of the week. So this game was freaking crazy. And it went back and forth. I don't know if you guys, you know, if everyone watched it, but basically the Pats scored at the end, which looked like it was going to seal the deal. And they went up 3. the Steelers came out, and on the second play from scrimmage, Juju Smith-Schuster, is that how you say it? Schuster-Smith? Juju Smith-Schuster took like an out route.
I think it was a design play. He just went on a really long.
It was a drag.
It was a drag route
under the. They sent him
underneath route. Yeah.
But it's designed to get yards and then get out of bounds. And he just turned it upfield and ran 69 yards.
Nice.
Down the field and immediately got them into field goal range. So the Steelers ran up. They're out of timeouts. They're down three. They're at like the 10-yard line. Actually, there might have even been more time. There was like 17 seconds. And Ben actually threw. He did the smart thing. He ran up to the line, fake spiked, and the dude ran a fade route, which was completely covered by the Pats. When it wasn't there, Ben did the dumb thing, and he tucked it and waited and stood in the pocket, and then that same receiver cut back to the middle of the field where all the defenders are standing. He's the only one running a route, so there's like six Pats defenders back there, and Roethlisberger tried to fit it in there when he shouldn't, and that's probably not the first time for him, but
oh my gosh.
I digress. So it gets tipped immediately, picked off, game over. But when you're in field goal range, you can't throw in traffic, right?
Yeah.
You can't take points off the board. The absolute worst, you know, the worst thing that can happen there is you kick the field goal and go into overtime. You still have a shot. So just brutal. Like, the end of that game had so many roller coasters up and down. There was the Jesse James catch that was actually ruled a touchdown and the first to win the game. They reviewed it and brought it back. I know everyone's complaining about that. Complain about the rule. That is the rule. For some reason, even if you break the plane in the end zone, if you go to the ground, you have to complete the catch through the end zone and through the ground. I know it's not a rule anywhere else. Like when you're running, if you break the plane, it's over. Mm-hmm. But on a catch, if you go to the ground, it cannot move on the ground. I don't like the rule either, but that's the rule. So everyone has to kind of live and die by that.
You ready for my take on
that? Yeah, let's hear it.
I'm fine with it. I really am.
You don't think that should be a catch?
I'm fine. Yeah, and here's why. I think what's his name? Not Dean Blandino, but Mike Pereira. He explained it in a way that I think it just makes sense to me. Like in the game of football, the ground is king. And if you make a catch and you go to the ground and you haven't been touched, especially if you haven't been touched, the ground, because in the NFL, like in all other leagues, all other types of football, I guess you could say, once you hit the ground, you're down in the game, and the play's dead, right? Mm-hmm. College, everything,
right?
Like once a knee or a forearm,
college.
Yeah, once a forearm is down or a butt cheek or whatever is down, it's down. The play's dead. Because we play by different rules in the NFL. I'm acting like I actually play, but because there's different rules for the NFL,
mm-hmm.
the play's not dead. It keeps going. And so if the ball hits the ground and it moves, to me, that's a sign of not having control of it.
Right.
And so I see why the rule is written the way it is. It's confusing as hell. I get that. Especially because one of the first things you're taught and when you play football is there's this imaginary plane that goes from the ground
right.
to the sky. And if you possess the ball and you break that plane, it's a touchdown.
Especially with like his knee on the ground and the ball over the plane.
Right.
It feels like it's over.
That's it. But the play's live.
Right.
Right. And so I get why. And this is like the exact reason why this rule was written. The exact reason. Because his knee hits the ground. The ball hits the ground. He loses control. And he did not. That's the exact definition of a process of a catch. He didn't complete the complete process. He brought it to his body, football move, all that junk. He went down, wasn't touched. He was still a live player, and he dropped it.
Yep.
End of story. Michael Scott. And
it's the Dez thing.
Yeah.
That's what kind of started all this.
It's stupid. The Megatron thing.
And that was a freaking playoff game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Megatron thing
started with the Lions get bent. Yeah. Like, and that was against the Bears. So I feel a little guilty. That was terrible. Like he turned. pretty much put the ball on the ground to get up to celebrate.
Yeah, that was
ridiculous. And it moved, and they freaking called it incomplete. I don't know. It's tough, but that is the rule.
Yeah.
And I agree with you there. Like, that's the rule, everybody, so we got to live with it. And
geez, sorry.
According to the rule, everyone comes out, oh, the Pats benefit from everything, oh, blah, blah, blah. It's like, no, that's the rule.
Yeah.
That game was fantastic. If you didn't get to watch it, I feel bad for you, son, because you missed out. That was great, great football. Just two heavyweights going back and forth and just incredible plays in that fourth quarter. So that was my third pick. And I got lucky there. So I went 2-1. You know, I hate to say that, lucky or whatever, but this is the other thing I was going to say, Chase. I had on Sunday, I made a bet that was a Pats and Cowboys money line parlay. So another quick gambling lesson. A money line is where you bet on a team and you're not betting on the spread. You're strictly just betting winners and losers. It sounds like it's easier, right? Because they don't have to cover anything. They just have to win. But it affects the odds. So if there's like a 3-point favorite, you might have to lay or bet $150, Chase, to win the 100. If there's like a 7-point favorite, you might have to bet like $300 to win the 100. So it affects the odds, right?
Right.
And so your odds go down if you're betting favorites, and they go way up if you're betting underdogs. So I had a Pats money line and a Cowboys money line. They're both very small favorites. But talking about that Cowboys game now, similar thing happened. Derek Carr had the Raiders in field goal range to, at worst, they were going to throw in the end zone to try and win it. There were no timeouts, and there's no hardly any time left, but they were inside the 10. It's an easy gimme field goal. And he tried to make a play and ended up fumbling through the end zone for a touchback and cost them the game. Both those teams were in situations where they could have kicked a field goal, gone to overtime, and then won. That's how hard it is to gamble in the NFL, I guess is what I'm saying. Like, if I was holding a Cowboys ticket or a Steelers ticket, I would be violent. And, so, you know, I just want to say that, like, luck, whatever you want to call it, like, I probably didn't deserve that, but at certain points in the game I did. It was just crazy. And that's why gambling's so freaking hard, and that's why they build casinos, and that's why the house always wins. But, couple other things. I'm on an NFL roll here, so
let me real quick before we move on.
Okay.
We talk a little bit more about the Cowboys game.
Sure.
So Big Cat on Twitter, you know, Barstool Big Cat, has this idea. Did you see him talking about
this?
Yes. I want to pick your brain on it because actually I like it. I really do. So his idea that instead of pylons, you put up mini basketball hoops, and this is because obviously the David Carr.
Well, we see it like 3 times a year now.
Yeah, where he missed the pylon and it went out of the back and it was a touchback.
We see it a lot, Chase.
Yeah.
People do that all the time.
Well, I think the game's kind of going through a change where you really can jump from like the 7-yard line and you're going to get a touchdown.
Yeah.
But sometimes you're not.
Right.
Like I would say 80% of the time you're going to score. You know, I didn't even say higher, maybe 90, 95.
Yep.
But those couple times you're not going to get, shout out Britt Carter bringing me water. I got a sore throat. So
thanks,
love you, babe. she's the best. So in the majority of the times you're going to score in those situations, but anyways, he has this idea that you put up little hoops and it's basically where if the ball goes through the hoop, it's also a touchdown.
So like if you make it,
it goes through. Yeah, so like counts. In that situation, like he's going to be a little bit short. He could have just like finger rolled it into this, into the hoop. And
it's like a sideways hoop, right? Or is it like a real hoop that's straight up and down? Like you have to dunk it over, or is it
I don't know. I was thinking about like, cause he also said it'll bring in the Quidditch nerds. Cause the Quidditch has like the vertical hoop.
Help ratings.
Yeah. And I think that way, or you could do the up and down one because he says that it could also bring in like Hail Marys. You know, you try and shoot it into the hoop.
Rodgers actually would be even better at Hail Mary.
Because they always throw into the garbage cans, right?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know.
I like it.
It kind of bring like a weird element into the game. You could make it worth like 4.
Yeah.
Or something. Or it could be a touchdown. I don't know.
It's cool. Well, I'm like, we really do see this several times a year now. It's to that point, and guys are trying to make a play. And, you know, hey, if he gets there and holds on, they win the game. Like,
Yeah.
And so it was tough. I actually do like that idea.
I mean, it's super gimmicky, but it's right. fun to talk about, right?
For sure.
And I just liked it, but.
So that was great. I mean, those are heartbreaking losses if you're a Cowboy or a Steeler fan or, you know, for the Raiders playoff hopes. Like, he. So I was, I guess I'm lucky, Chase. I don't know, but that was just, I just wanted to talk about that to say how hard it is and how two plays changed the course of those bets, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I was fortunate to be on the right side. But.
So I don't know if you want to, if this is like gambling taboo or not, but I've had a lot of people ask me, listeners of the pod, what, like, are you over the span of your gambling time, your lifetime, are you up or down? Or can you tell me?
In all betting or just like sports betting or
let's just say sports betting.
Sports betting is tough. So, let me explain something real quick. When it comes to betting, and this will answer your question in a roundabout way, but to be a professional bettor, you need to hit like 56% of your bets, okay? Because on any given line, it's -110. On any bet is -110, right? Because you pay a 10% vig juice to the book.
Meaning right, so the, you need the book is making 10% of your bet.
Yeah, so if you bet -110s every time and you didn't have any sense the other way, going either way, you just bet straight numbers. You would need to hit 56% because you're 55%, you're breaking even with the juice.
Right.
56, you're winning money. So to be a pro, the smart thing is to bet single bets, never change your unit size or how much you bet, and try and hit 56 bets out of 100. And you'll win money, you'll turn a profit. That's hard to do. It's hard to have money management is very important when it comes to gambling. But for me personally, I don't bet big enough. Sometimes I do. Sometimes I bet, you know, but I don't bet big enough on a regular basis enough to like really. It's recreational still for me.
Yeah.
Even though I'm betting a lot of bets. And sometimes I have good weeks. Sometimes I have bad weeks. But what I'm trying to get to is I don't go the professional route when I make my bets. I do a lot of parlays and I do a lot of parlays are why they build casinos because I look at it as like, I'm just trying to hit long shots. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not like betting straight bets every time. I'll do like 3-team parlays, 4-team parlays because I'm trying to like make it rich one weekend.
Turn 50 and have, bucks into 500.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. So,
and have some fun.
You know, I set myself limits as far as that goes and whatnot. But I don't know. I do pretty well. I've had good years. I've had bad years. I've had good months. I've had bad months. I've had really good weeks. I've had really bad weeks. So mm-hmm. kind of goes back and forth. I don't know. If you add in poker, I feel like I'm definitely up.
Yeah, I could vouch for that for sure.
So it's tough. But sports betting's hard, and I shoot for a lot of long shots. So it's not... Maybe not. You know what I mean? Yeah. I probably have
money. You're taking longer odds in sports betting.
So. Especially in the NFL, like football season runs around. I have a gambling account. And that's like, if I lose it all through the season, it'll be there next season and I'll have that. You know what
yeah.
I mean?
Yeah.
So,
and the thing I think like we live in a market and we associate with people that aren't used to gambling and gambling's not talked about. It's fairly taboo here. You know, it's against the rules of the church, whatever you want to say. But there is an element to it, like you mentioned,
that's very illegal.
Yeah, that's very recreational. It's very fun to bet on a game. It's very fun to place a wager down and try and make some money on it. Now, the line is obviously, is it becoming a problem? Is it, you know, are you out of control? Because that happens to people, and it's unfortunate, and they lose a lot. They think, I'll just bump this 500 bucks up to 10 grand
for or, sure.
You know, and for me, it's like we go down to Vegas and stuff. I'm not into it as much, but like I'll lay down, like I'll buy into a parlay with you or we'll bet on the Jazz together,
right?
Or we'll bet on an over. And it's like, it's fun because it's like, it just adds one more element to the game. of competition. Yep. And it just, like, you can root for any game, any given moment. It's it's fun. And I think,
especially when you're in Vegas in the sports book,
right,
watching with a couple hundred other people that are betting these same games. And it's exciting.
Explain to people, like, the reason why we go down during March Madness is because it's the best. There's 5,000 people in this little theater, and every bucket people are cheering for each team.
Yeah.
And it's crazy. It's like being at the game almost, because it's a game within the game, right? And it's just, it's a lot of fun.
Especially when there's like a 18-point dog that wins in the first round, like people go nuts. Yeah. I don't know. It's fun.
A lot of fun. So anyways, I just wanted to see, like, kind of pick your brain on sports betting overall.
For sure. And I'm not going to lie, dude. Like, oh yeah, I'm a degenerate. Like, I love to gamble, right? Like, you know, I'm always gambling, but it's within reason, and it's, like I said, it is recreational, and for the most part, it's like I'm trying to get lucky just like anything else.
Yeah.
I take a lot of long shots, so a couple more things on the NFL. Thanks for asking, Chase. So, did I give away too much information about myself?
Nope. Okay. I don't think so.
A couple more things from the NFL. Speaking of gambling, this was the third time since the merger in 1970 that all of the favorites in this past weekend's games won.
They all cover, or they all just won?
They all won.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Okay, wow.
Yeah.
That's only three times it's happened since 79?
Yep.
Wow.
So, which is kind of crazy. This brings me to another point. I'm glad we're talking gambling, because you know this is my wheelhouse. So, I think gamblers, like what you just said, here in Utah and whatnot, maybe not as many gamblers, but if you noticed, it is becoming more mainstream. So you have FanDuel and oh my gosh, DraftKings that just busted that open. But now you see like ESPN hanging lines.
Oh, they'll put lines on games.
And now they talk lines on the shows. And now
Scott,
like,
Scott Van Pelt.
Yeah. He has bad beat segments. Like, so it is getting more mainstream. And I think for some reason, gamblers are actually getting smarter. Back in the day, gamblers, recreational guys, and guys that weren't super sharp, loved to bet favorites and loved to bet, you know, try and cover favorites. And the smart guys were always betting the underdogs, because there's always more value on the underdogs, because you can cover a game two ways, cover the spread or win outright. Mm-hmm. And rec money, smart, you know, guys like that don't like to bet bad teams, which are usually getting points. But now I think this has flipped a little bit. And this is just my point of view. But like you see all these favorites covering the spread and winning now. I think it's gone the other way. More money's coming in on underdogs now. Mm-hmm. And now the books have adjusted and shortened these lines a little bit. And now you see more favorites winning on weekends and covering on weekends.
Yep.
And so I just think that's interesting. Like, I think gamblers, it is becoming more mainstream, and they are getting smarter. Any thoughts on that, Jay? Because they say, like, everyone, like in the Super Bowl, the favorite bet is to bet the favorite and the over.
Yeah.
Life's too short to bet the under, right? Like, guys that just want to bet, they're usually going to take the favorite, and they like to see points.
Yeah. Well,
And
I hate to say this, but the Joe Schmo sports fan is going to be like, there's no way the Jaguars are going to beat the Patriots.
Right.
Like, or whoever it is, you know, like, they don't even look at the line. They don't even look at anything. They just go, oh, Patriots are winning that game.
Still the most money bet is still the Pats, Steelers, Packers. Like, those teams all get public money every week because of what you're talking about.
Because it's just, it's kind of just like, I would almost say like a guy thing, like, it's the same reason why everybody thinks they're a couch coach or a Monday morning quarterback. Like, we think we know the sports and we think we know, but guess what? Vegas knows better than we do. There's a reason why they're still building those, you know, those casinos.
I trust my friends in the desert.
Yeah. They're undefeated.
So a couple more things real quick, just that I wanted to hit on NFL. The Davis hit in the Carolina game. You see that on Devontae Adams?
Yeah, because I had Devontae Adams in my fantasy lineup.
That's right.
Luckily, he scored a touchdown before that.
He actually had a big day before that. He got you points. But this, okay, so they need to figure this out. I know it's gray area. I know all this, but This is the definition of a cheap shot, dirty shot. Like, did not have his head. It was a cracked back. Left his feet. Launched.
Yeah, he's checking off every single box. Yeah,
all of them. Left his feet, helmet to helmet, launched. Cracked back. Like, all of it. And he gets to stay in the game. And I don't know. We kind of talked about this a little bit. What to do. I think they need to get... I think you need to stiffen the penalty for that play. And the Gronk play, to be honest. Those are dirty plays that have no place in the game. And you want guys to be scared of the penalty. So I don't know if you go... like, so they made it two games. He appealed. It's already down to one game. That's what Crabtree and Tlaib got for fighting.
Yeah.
Like, they were squaring up on each other, throwing punches with helmets on. This guy got the same penalty for, like, almost decapitating a receiver.
Yeah.
I don't get that.
It's ridiculous. I'm with you. I think that... okay, here's my thing. And I think there's a couple different ways we can look at this. I think this is important to talk about. And I'd like to get some feedback, too, on the Twitter or whatever, or send us an email. I'd like to know what people think. Because I think there's multiple ways to go about this. Here's what I think. I think there's a few avenues to go. Mine is, the first one is a more severe in-game penalty. So ejection is one option, right? You immediately get ejected if it's something like this, like, or Gronk's, or like, you're gone. I don't care what point in the game it's at, you're gone. You're done. You can no longer help your team in this game because you've proven that you can't control yourself and you've taken a cheap shot, right? Okay. It's the equivalent of the double technical or the flagrant two in NBA. Like, you're gone. You're done. You're kicked out of the game.
Yeah.
You make the penalty worse. What if we made a 30-yard penalty? You double the worst. 30 yards. That's backbreaking, right? That's a backbreaking penalty.
Yep.
All of a sudden, you're out of field goal range. All of a sudden, you're on the 5-yard line when you were on the 35 or whatever. Right. It's like, that flips the entire field. It causes an immediate impact. Like, if that happens, you're going to get pulled out of the game anyways by your coach. Mm-hmm. Like, 30-yard penalty, are you kidding me? Like, so there's that avenue you can take, and then there's steeper or just way harsher fines. Like, let's make these fines like $500,000 or $250,000 or something just ridiculous.
I mean, it does matter on their contract. So I think you just say game check.
Like, game check.
You miss a whole, you get suspended for the next game, you miss a whole game check. Like, all of a sudden you miss, what is that, 7% of your salary? And you miss 7% of your... there's only 16 NFL games.
Right.
So, like, missing one is steep. Missing two is really steep. And missing game checks would hurt a lot. I agree, though. You have to scare guys. And there's not... this doesn't... there is a gray area. There will always be a gray area. But the Carolina hit, to me, is, like, one of the worst. And even Gronk's was dirty.
Yeah.
Went and smashed the dude's head into the ground when he wasn't looking. Yeah. And so... But those are at the top, and then, like, stuff under that that's, like, the Trevathan hit. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Like, it was helmet to helmet, but it was in the game. Do you know what I mean? That's a difference than, like, and it was a running back in the middle of the field running through the line.
Yeah.
A little different to me than, like, a crackback block on someone that doesn't see it coming. And after the play's over, cheap shot by Gronk. So... I agree. Steep in the penalty. Can't believe he already appealed and won his appeal down to one game.
That's ridiculous. That's crazy. I mean, it's like, what is, that's like my one thing, like with Goodell, it's like,
I think the players,
nothing means anything. Like no punishment. It has zero weight behind it.
Yeah.
Because you know it's going to get appealed and it's going to be taken down.
The Players Association has done a great job of, like, yeah, getting appeals, you know, to lessen penalty and not, I don't know. We already kind of covered the catch rule, and that was the other thing I was going to talk about. I don't know. It's crazy.
What do you think about doing like a, I think what they should do with college football targeting, like a level of, I don't know if flagrancy is a word, but level of malice. I don't even know the word I'm looking for, but in the NBA, you have like a flagrant one, flagrant two, you have two technicals, you get kicked out. Like, do you think they add levels in? Because I, like, especially in college, it's like, if something gets called for targeting, which they can't figure out at all,
yeah, you know, there's
out.
So the NFL, that's the scary thing, is if the NFL copies the college, which is crazy that you'd ever copy the NCAA on anything. They'd have their heads so far up their asses. Like, but if they went that route, then they do need to have tiers, because going to the college rule, that is ridiculous that those kids get ejected on something that isn't targeting
right
half the time.
And then have to sit out the next game.
And it's not too dirty. It's not like it's a receiver, it's a football turning play. Their yeah. head and bang, bang. Mike Mitchell talked about it on the Steelers like about a week ago. He was saying, man, someone throws a bad pass, so the receiver has to duck.
Yeah.
And I'm already leveling him up to hit him in the midsection. Because if it's a bad pass, he turns his head down lower and I pop him in the head. Like, it's just intent should be measured, you know?
Yeah.
Like, and if it's happening during a play, let's be a little more lenient. But if it's a crackback or if it's after the play, go hard
yeah.
on the penalty.
And what's hard is, like, the last thing we want to do is slow these games down anymore. It's like, we don't want these right. reviews in-game and stuff. So, and I get it. Like, safety is obviously a huge concern, but they've got to figure something out on these
wink,
rules.
Wink, wink.
Yeah, exactly.
Cool.
So why don't you go over this week's picks?
Oh my gosh, I haven't gotten to them.
Yeah, we're... why don't you go over this week's picks, and then we'll cruise on to the end here.
All right, so I'm going to stick with that sexy bastard, Sean McVay.
I love him.
He's traveling to Tennessee this week. The Rams are 6.5-point favorites at Tennessee. The Titans secondary will not be able to handle this Rams offense. They're 25th in pass defense. The Rams are on a roll, Chase. Like you said it earlier, they went to Seattle and gave them their worst beating they've had there in what? Since Russell Wilson's been there?
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, yeah. They just mopped the floor with them. Their offense is insane. They scored 42 again this week. Two of that was on a safety. So their offense scored 40, I think.
And their defense, like their line, like it was nice to see Russell Wilson had nothing to do. He was running for his life. He had nowhere to go. He was, for the first time in a long time, he was actually bottled up. Like he was getting whipped around, throwing passes backwards. He was throwing passes over his head. He was doing all sorts of, they made him look stupid. Like for how Superman-esque he's been, they made him look silly.
The Rams defense, so they haven't been playing great this year, but they have really good players.
Monsters.
Yeah, I know that sounds kind of like an oxymoron, but they have studs, and if they can put it together for a game like this, look what they just did to Seattle. So they're going under a touchdown. I know I sound like a broken record. That seems short. Like, why isn't this Rams team that is just destroying teams, not even favored by a touchdown against this Titans team, who I still think is a pretender. Sorry, Chris. That's my first pick, Chase. So Rams -6.5. Second pick, you're not going to like this one. I have the Jacksonville Jaguars traveling to San Francisco. So they're laying 4 points against Jimmy G. And the reason why I like that, it does, the Jags have been rolling as well. Still don't completely trust Bortles, but number one rush offense in the league. Leonard Fournette, dude, and that O-line averaging 149 yards per game. On the defensive side of the ball, they are great. The Vikings are really good. I think the Jags have the number one defense, and this is why. Number one in pass defense. So Jimmy G is going to struggle, dude. Try throwing the ball on Jalen Ramsey. They're number one in the league. They give up 168 pass yards a game. Incredible. Number one scoring defense. They give up under 15 points a game. This Jacksonville defense is great.
I can't wait to go bet the Niners +4. I cannot wait. I'm betting the mortgage on it.
Wow. So Jags -4. That's not a huge spread. I'm going to take them there. I'm sure Bortles will throw two pick sixes and
Jimmy G is going to have 300 plus.
So third pick, and this one, oh man, plug your nose. I've got Oakland Raiders getting 10 points at the Philadelphia Eagles.
Really? You like this?
Double digit dogs in the NFL.
Big Dick Nick doesn't move it for you, huh?
He had a great game last game. I want to see it 2 weeks in a row. But this is a gamble. Oakland has kind of been okay this year.
Did you just say this is a gamble?
Yeah, it's...
Yeah, it is. You're right. It is a gamble.
Well, those other two are locks, so...
Oh, okay. I got it. Okay. This is the gambling of the week.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oakland getting 10. They don't look great, but they still have a decent offense. Eagles defense hasn't been playing that great lately. Like, dude, the Giants just cut them up. They scored 30 on them. So I think Oakland has a little bit better offense than the Giants. The big thing here is, though, I can get lucky. If some things happen early in the day, Doug Peterson has already come out and said if they clinch, that he probably will rest starters.
Oh, and really? So okay.
I like getting 10
There's
points.
There's an angle there.
Yeah, I like getting 10 points in that situation. It would be upsets that have to happen because I don't, the Vikings are still playing for a seed, so they're not going to roll over anything. But there is a chance that this is a Monday night game that... the Eagles have already clinched. So in that case, I really like the 10. Yeah. Like I said, it's not the prettiest pick. Plug your nose.
There's a lot going on though. There's a lot of moving parts for it to where it makes sense.
Right. So. 10 points. Derek Carr is a great backdoor cover guy. I can see him being down like 14 and then driving in the fourth quarter with that.
Picking up a touchdown.
Yeah. Prevent defense on. So, Rams minus 6.5, Jags minus 4, Raiders plus 10. Book it.
Sweet. So let's just, before we wrap up here, a few more things we need to cover. I'm just going to go over the BYU game. I kind of mentioned it already. BYU picked up a win against Utah Saturday night. BYU is off to their best start since Jimmer's senior season. They're 9-2. They made the sweep of the in-state teams. They've played Weber, Utah State, Utah.
Love it.
Utah Valley.
Taste it, little brothers.
Beat them all. And so that's... It's nice, they just feel, it's weird. Like, it used to feel like BYU would win games by like 20 or lose by 20. And we're grinding wins out. We're defensively minded. Our offense has like an identity to it as far as our go-to guy is Elijah Bryant. And he made that very clear in this game. He had 29 against Utah. And he was, I think, 4 for 7 on threes. Maybe 5 for 7, but he shot really well. And if we needed a bucket, this is the healthy Elijah Bryant we were told about.
Yeah.
And it's just nice to see it because
he's finally healthy.
He's shooting well, especially when that outside shot's falling. The thing that's nice about his game is he's a slasher and he's strong. He goes to the rack and he finishes. But when his outside shot's going, it's like they can't guard him because if they get up into him, he drives past them. They back off. He knocks it down. And he was catch shoot.
Yep.
Thought everything was going in and shot really well.
The good sign, and he had a fantastic ball game. The good sign of a good team here is we now have guys, some guys can have, a guy can have an off night and we can win still.
Yeah, TJ Haas had 4 points.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like we have a couple guns now.
Yeah.
We have some guys you want to go to war with. And Yoli got hurt and rolled his ankle and was like, not himself for the second half, but we kept it together and we have a really good team. There's everyone can play.
Yeah, everybody. Like I said, Peyton Dashrup came in and immediately contributed. He's 6'10", my guy, Kay Cannon.
He played well. Plays, plus 21.
Yeah, comes in, looks to assist.
His plus minus was insane.
He, early in the game, he kind of got stuck, picked up his dribble. They backed off him. He's like, okay. Shoots, nails, it's just, it was nice to see. I don't have the numbers in front of me. Actually fake out. Yes, I do. Our bench just way outperformed Utah's bench. We ended with 22 bench points and they had 8.
Yeah.
And so that's a really huge stat in basketball. If your bench can score, you're going to be just fine. And what I like seeing, freaking Christian Papula kid. I mean, he didn't really play much, played 2 minutes, but did nothing. Like, we thought that was a huge recruit we lost, and he flipped from BYU to Utah.
Uh-huh.
It was like my least favorite people ever, obviously, for obvious reasons. But, Yoli had still ended up with 15 points. He got the worst injury ever. His calf seizes up, and because it does, he has no balance and then rolls his opposite ankle.
Yeah.
It's like, that's like the worst thing that could happen in a basketball game. and they still pulled it through. So just...
Well, he should have been playing Chase, according to every Utah fan.
Oh, yeah. Shout out to the Utah fans that were deleting their accounts, that were already diminishing the win. Like, I love that more than anything. Like, oh, well, you know, we didn't have our two best players, and, you know... BYU, like, they're being really dumb playing Yoli Childs, and it's like, GTFO, like, we beat your ass, and you know what? I loved it, so.
Yeah, it's our turn.
To quote Nick Emery, we beat your ass, sit down, so.
Keep it current, you fans, keep it current.
Yeah, and it was just nice to see everybody contribute in different ways, so great for them. They're finishing up before conference play with two not... so good teams. They have Idaho State come in, who's in the Big Sky. They're 4-5, and then Texas Southern 0-12.
You know what though? So we 11-2.
We should go into conference play 11-2. I mean, never say never, but we should be 11-2 going to conference play, which is solid.
This is unless something bad happens, and knock on wood or whatever. But this is a tournament team.
Could be, yeah, absolutely. I mean, right now you look at them.
Chase, and we lose 2-3 games in conference play. Oh gosh, I hate saying that because but even if we lose 4. I think we're right there.
Well, and what's weird is Gonzaga hasn't been as dominant as everyone thought. Mary's hasn't been as good as everyone thought.
St. Mary's has fallen off. Yeah. Like, what's happened then in the last 2 weeks? They are not what we thought.
Yeah. I mean, conference play is different. But there's a few things to be excited about. And I think number one is that our defense is better. They're refreshing. Their rotations are way better. Their closeouts are way better. We're not making things easy. I'm not going to say this against St. Mary's because they absolutely embarrassed us last year in one of the worst basketball games I've ever seen BYU play, but I feel better about playing them this year with the way our defense is.
Yeah.
Way better.
We can win. We can win a couple ways. Let's jump just quickly, like super lightning round on the Jazz. The most Jazz thing ever. We lose to the Bulls and beat the Celtics on the road.
Yeah.
That's the Utah Jazz in a nutshell. You know, we're still struggling through this road trip. We actually hung with the Rockets. Looked like we could maybe steal that one. And then they just had a fourth quarter from hell. And got outscored in the
Cavs.
Got outscored in the fourth, 41-15. And Eric Gordon just went nuts. Those guys are incredible. Hey, they actually look like they have a chance to beat the Warriors to me.
Yeah, really I don't think that's crazy at all. I mean, Chris Paul is playing the best of his career. Harden is Harden.
They're so efficient on both sides of the ball.
Like they have those like three tiers we talked about last episode. They have them. They have all three tiers, and then they have a defensive stopper in Capella.
They have that stretch four that everyone wants, which is Ryan Anderson. And then they have Ariza and Paul that can chase those guards on Golden State around.
Length.
Yeah. Yep. And they can defend some of those guards.
Mm-hmm.
Usually, you know what I mean? You gotta be able to defend Steph and Clay and Durant in the playoffs. The Rockets have a couple guys that they can do that.
Yeah, they can at least and they're the one team that can score with the
exactly
they can score with them.
But this isn't the Rockets segment, so
it isn't. Oh, okay.
So we're gonna continue to go through this road trip, Jay. We get home, we get the Spurs on the back end of a back to back,
who are not playing TNT. Very well, and of course it's on the end of a back to back.
Yeah, on TNT, and then December is just gonna be rough all the way through to January. If we can get out of this maybe like 4 or 5 games under 500, I'm starting to think that if Favors comes back, I just think we're too talented to actually tank. Now that I think about it, like I really think we can hang around 500 ball, which you might get the 8 seed.
Yeah.
Going 41-41.
It'll be a playoff.
We're going to be there at the end, I think. I don't think we can tank. I don't think we should. Because we're not going to get better than like a top 8 pick anyway.
Yeah.
So what, you know, 8th seed or 9th pick, which would you rather have? I'd almost rather have 8th seed. Look what we did with Donovan Mitchell.
Nice thing in this whole thing is he is growing his brand. Holy cow. Yeah. I mean, after every game, he's got LeBron talking to him, yeah. D-Wade talking to him, Harden, Paul. Everybody's talking to him. Everybody wants to talk to him. We haven't had this in the social media age, I would say. Sorry, Gordon Hayward, you weren't that player. No one wanted to hit up, hey, let's meet me at the club after the game. Hey, you do you. Like, yeah. Tweeting about him. Like,
hey, I'll see you on League of Legends later.
Yeah. Like,
GTFO.
I'll be the Zerg, you be the Protoss. Don't build your cannons too soon. Zerg Rush attack.
Nice.
Like, yeah, okay, I played. All right, get off me. So,
no, it's great.
It's so refreshing, dude. Like,
yeah, even like national media tweet, like he's getting a lot of love for rookie of the year. Like, hey, Ben Simmons, look what this Mitchell kid's doing.
Yeah.
And it's awesome.
They're sending out his highlights.
Yeah.
Like, in every game now, he gets a highlight or two because he does things where everyone's like, holy crap, that's a rookie, you know?
I think he's going to be great, and we got a blue chipper for sure. I don't know. I think we're too good to actually – I think we're going to hang around. The West isn't as good as everyone thought. We'll keep an eye on our Jazz. That was a quick Jazz segment. We'll hit them hard next week, Chase. But let's do our food review real quick and bounce.
Let's do it. Yeah. So this week's food review comes – you know, we like to always say we have these hidden gems or whatever. This is another place that's been around for a long time, but not a lot of people know about it. They actually have two locations. One just off the 201 in Salt Lake City. I think it's like 300 West and...
It's further west than that. 3500 West.
3500 West and... what south is that? Like
17th or something?
17th south, I think.
Or 20th? Right, yeah. So it's kind of like if you're ever out by the airport-ish or if you're out on the west side of Salt Lake, this is a spot to hit up.
Yeah, and it's El Paisa Grill. They also have one of these in Ogden on 12th Street.
Yep.
They just recently came up to Ogden.
That's cool. Second location.
Yeah. So the great thing about this place is the taco bar for lunch, okay? It's the best thing that they've ever thought of. I'll say. So basically what this does is you pay $12. Mm-hmm. You get a drink and unlimited tacos.
Yes.
And when I say unlimited, I mean unlimited tacos.
So the setup is awesome. You walk up and it's like a buffet line and you walk through and you tell them how many and what meat and they load you up plates of tacos. Mm-hmm. And they're little street tacos, but they're fantastic. So the thing I like about it, Chase, is they have six different meats you could choose from. So they have carne asada, they have carnitas, and they have chicken, pastor, and chorizo, which is a good selection. It's not just chicken or steak or chicken or pork. Six different meats. Then they have a great salsa bar with cilantro, onions, pico, different kinds of salsas.
And lime wedges.
Yeah, limes. And then I love refried beans and Mexican rice, and that is included. So you don't have to eat just tacos. You can actually make it kind of a meal, but you can just keep going back and back and back and loading up.
Yeah. So I do know this. The max you can get on one trip is six. And I always start off with a banger. Say, hit me with the full six shooter.
For sure. You got to start
also
with
rice
that.
And beans in the middle. I usually get one of each of the meats, two carne asada, because I'm not crazy. And I probably consume 3 to 4 complete onions. Last time I went there, like 12 hours later, I went to work. Not 12 hours later, like 6 hours later, I was at work. And somebody immediately goes, somebody eat onions?
Oh, no.
Across the room. So
that's right.
Yeah, I had a lot. Because for me, if I had to eat rice and beans with onion in it for the rest of my life, as like a mush, I'm in.
I'm the same
way. Sign me up.
That white onion and refried beans.
Yeah, sign me up.
A little bit of cilantro too if you're feeling spicy. So our guy, shout out to Stu, holds the record, right? I think it was 17 tacos.
I think it was. Stu knows his tacos.
Mm-hmm.
Stu introduced me to El Paisa. Took me, when we were both working at 1-800 Contacts, took me there, met one of his homies.
Like a gentleman.
I was like acting tough. And tapped out at, I think I went 6th and 12, and then I like tried to get 4 more, and like completely tapped out at 13 and a half.
Yeah.
Like, was going to die, tapped out, and dude put it down, and God, I mean, it was...
So let us know if you can beat that.
Yeah, 17, and I will just, pro tip, if you're going to try and go for the taco record, just go ahead and skip out on the rice and beans.
And the chips and salsa, because they do bring chips and salsa unlimited.
Yeah.
So it's not just, like, it's a meal.
Oh, absolutely.
So, it's awesome.
I mean, it's $12, all you can eat tacos. What more do you want in life?
And they're really, really good.
Yeah. They're really, really good. So, I did look up the address here. It's 2126 3200 West in West Valley City.
Yeah.
That's where it's at. So
that's the OG. There's a new one in Ogden.
Yeah, on 12th Street. So... this is West Valley City. It's like, and I would say if you're going to go, honestly, like you should probably try and get there between 11:30 and 11:45 in the morning for the lunch, because it's like line out the door, nowhere to park like the worst parking lot ever.
That's how you know it's good though.
Yeah. And
you gotta beat the rush.
You gotta get there and beat the rush. So that's the food review, El Paisa Grill. I personally give it 5 out of 5 stars because if you ever have anything unlimited food wise, I'm in. So, let's see. So just to wrap up here, next week we'll be back down at your casa doing the next pod Tuesday. We have submitted to iTunes. We're currently under review. Fingers crossed that that gets greenlit. And then if it does, this will be on iTunes this week. So right now it'll just be on our normal SoundCloud account, but if it does come out on iTunes, we will definitely let you know. So look to subscribe and
please review. Subscribe.
Subscribe, listen, unsubscribe, then resubscribe and listen again.
Yep. And then tell someone else to subscribe. We would greatly appreciate it. But keep your eye out for that. We'll definitely let you know. We will have a guest next week as well, Chase.
Yeah.
So looking forward to that. Hit us up on the Twitters. We're going to have a couple polls going out this week. At Salt City Podcast. Chase is at Chase_A_Soris. And I am at PotatoSack7.
Sweet. Well, for Clay, I'm Chase, and that'll be another episode. Thanks again for joining us. Have a good night.